Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 76 of the Attractions Podcast. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Seth.
And we're here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what's going on in our own lives. Seth, have you had a better week this week?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking. Yeah, we're still sad about the passing of our kitty. But, you know, we recovered by going to the final day of the Epcot Festival of the Arts, which is my personal favorite Epcot festival.
Same.
And actually got to see a little overlap. They sort of started Flower and Garden stuff before Festival of the Arts even ended. So it was a little surreal. We don't even get real diet Epcot anymore. There's always some festival going on now. But that was fun to check out. And I also got to visit Animal Kingdom and got to do that animation experience that we talked about last week with baby Tuk Tuk. He was just as cute as I hoped for. Get to see a little clip from the new movie, and it was a challenging piece to draw, but
really?
I'm glad. Yeah, they give you a guide circle. They start out by giving you the circle with the guidelines. You need a head start on this guy because he's got a lot of difficult little detail, but it was definitely worth taking the train out there and doing that.
That's awesome. Your guide circle thing made me think of that SpongeBob episode where he draws the really intricately shaded face and then erases it all to get that perfect circle.
So how was your week? Hopefully it was a little warmer and less frozen.
Shockingly, we were back up in the 70s and low 80s, like,
amazing.
Immediately. I got my pipes fixed, so that was awesome. And then we had some friends come into town. They'll be here for the rest of the week, just kind of hanging out and getting to know the city in case they decide to relocate here, which is cool. And then on Saturday morning, I had the Ryan the Last Dragon press junket.
Oh.
In which Benedict Wong showed up dressed up like his character, taking the call from his bathroom. So that was...
That's awesome.
It was really good. If I had been allowed to take pictures, I would have. And you just have to trust me. If you look up what his character looks like in Raya, you'll understand how hilarious it was. But it was very fun. Clearly everyone that worked on this movie felt very passionate about it, and I really liked it, so I can't wait for it to come out next week, and or this week if you're listening on Monday, and hopefully you like it.
Yeah, it's got great buzz. I will admit I am cheap, so I will probably wait for it to join the regular Disney Plus lineup.
That's valid.
I know there are people who are eager to pay for the premiere access for that one. So
I'm not sure when it'll go up for free. I think Mulan's downtime was like 3 months on premiere access.
Yeah, I figure 90 days or so, and it'll probably show up.
But it's a great watch for sure. Big fan.
Nice.
And without any further ado, let's hop into this week's news. First up, I feel like we manifested this because we said last week, I hope they redo Buzz and Jessie No Neck, and they did.
Yep.
Over at Hong Kong Disneyland, guests meeting the Toy Story gang can now see Jessie and Buzz's new looks that are much closer to their on-screen appearances.
Yeah, it's a subtle change. I think the biggest change that I noticed with Jessie is that her mouth is a little open now, and it's combined with a slight change to her eyes, it's a lot friendlier, slightly less creepy look. And they also seem maybe a little bit shorter too. We noticed that with Woody, that they're going with a slightly different height range for these characters.
Yeah, they almost look like they're the same height now, whereas Buzz used to be a little bit taller.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks less like a thumb from Spy Kids now too, which is always good. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, and the colors also look a little bit brighter, a little bit more vibrant, but that could be just that the older costumes had been a little sun bleached.
Yeah. I love this new look. I hope that it makes its way over here eventually. This is only at Hong Kong Disneyland for now. But keeping our fingers crossed that this makes its way over to Orlando.
I'm going to keep my eye out next time I'm at Hollywood Studios and see if these guys start showing up in Toy Story Land here.
Yeah, I love that. And Buzz looks just like the toys. It's honestly kind of weird, but in a cool way. Next up, we got some premiere dates for your next Disney Plus addiction.
I'm still not over the fact that we're only one episode away from the end of WandaVision.
So don't remind me.
They're just doing this to distract us from the fact that that WandaVision's coming to an end.
And it makes me
so sad.
It's
a good distraction.
Yeah. But if you are interested, Star Wars The Bad Batch will premiere on May the 4th and then have its second episode premiere 3 days later on May the 7th. And then new episodes will continue to premiere on Fridays. And Loki will kick off on Friday, June 11th. I'm really excited for Loki.
Yeah, we last saw Loki in Endgame when he steals the Tesseract and sort of disappears into the multiverse. So I think this will give the Marvel writers a lot of opportunities to put Loki into interesting locations and situations. I think this one's going to be really funny, I hope.
Mm-hmm. I want to know what is the extent of Owen Wilson's character, because in the trailer he's like a serious like government suit and he has a mustache and like a really short haircut, and he's funny, so I wonder.
Yeah.
And then we also have premiere dates for Monsters at Work, which I have been wanting to see something from since they announced it initially years ago. It premieres on July 2nd, and it takes the time frame of the series takes place the day after Monsters Incorporated switches to laugh-powered energy for Monstropolis. Sully and Mike will make appearances, but the show is following the story of Tyler Tuskbon, newly graduated top of his class scarer at Monster University, who shows up for his first day of work realizing that he's not going to be a scarer.
So this is basically the Office of Pixar movies.
Yeah, I hope it's good. I really want to see it. And then we also have a Turner and Hooch sequel reboot. Feelings?
I didn't realize that there was a huge population out there screaming for more Turner and Hooch. But
me neither.
it's from like kind of my childhood, and even I don't have hugely fond memories of it, but yay.
Yeah. Josh Peck plays Scott Turner, the son of Tom Hanks's Scott Turner from the movie, and they have a few dogs. I think they said three are portraying Hooch, the hand-me-down doggy, but it should be cute. Antics, animals.
Now, is this supposed to be the original Hooch or a descendant of one very long-lived dog, if he's still around from the
The premise of the show says that Turner inherits this dog, so
that's like 187 dog years. Then
he's really old. I don't know. Hopefully they'll.
The whole show is just the dog sitting there sleeping.
Turner and Hooch.
That's all he can do now. He's really old.
Maybe they'll address that. Maybe there's like a puppy montage or something that we'll get. And then the last thing we got a date for is Chip and Dale Park Life, which before I saw this image, I thought it was that weird hybrid live action animation movie thing that they teased during the investor day with Seth Rogen and John Mulaney and someone else as Chip and Dale. But this is different.
This is an animated series.
Yes, this is their 36 7-minute shorts premiering on July 23rd that will see Chip and Dale living in a park in the middle of a city.
It seems a little bit like they're trying to give Chip and Dale a makeover like they did with the Mickey Mouse shorts over the last few years. The image that we have is pretty darn adorable.
Yeah. So
we'll see how... I don't know if they're going to go as edgy and kind of creepy as some of those Mickey Mouse shorts are, or if this is going to be more cute.
I have to say I'm a fan of the weird, edgy Mickey Mouse shorts.
I love them, but...
I love them.
Some of it borders on Ren and Stimpy territory.
Oh, man. Yeah, sometimes I... especially that one short series that they put out for Mickey's 90th birthday makes me wonder how any of that got approved. But next up, shock of the week, Joe Rohde has decided that the sky is not the limit anymore. It's space.
You know, when he first announced his retirement from Disney, I felt a little sorry for him that, you know, there are probably some big projects at Disney that he still dreamed of, like fixing the Yeti that, you know, he'll never get to do now. And now I'm thinking, who cares about fixing the Yeti when you can go into space? Like this is truly like, you know, that they ask athletes, you know, you just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do next? Go to Disney World? Well, you've already gone to Disney World. Where are you going to go next? Outer space.
Yeah. It's unreal. Joe Rohde is now the one of the strategic advisors for Virgin Galactic as an experience architect. Basically, he will get to Imagineer a space experience for Virgin's commercial spaceflight thing.
I think what's cool about this is that it shows that they know. I mean, you're gonna be paying six figures to be shot into space. This is, you know, they talk about it's democratizing space travel, but this is only going to be for really wealthy people. And, you know, if you're going to be spending that much on something, you want something that isn't just, you know, a technical experience, or, you know, you want something that's an emotional experience. And this shows that they're, you know, they're going to be telling a story, and that it's going to be a whole journey and not just you're going to be a lab rat strapped into a can. So you know, I'm hoping that they are looking for journalists to cover this.
Right.
I'm volunteering right now. My wife is probably screaming at the iPad listening to the broadcast and saying, no, you're not allowed to go. But
If you can take a plus one? Would you go?
If Joe Rohde can be my plus one, I will hold his hand as we launch, as we lift off. I trust in Joe.
And I mean, come on, look at this image. Like, this photo is, it's like something you would see on Time Magazine or something. I don't know. It just...
It's very inspiring. You know, they released a little video of him talking about it, and, you know, I got a little misty. I think it's cool that someone, you know, can spend their whole life sort of telling, you know, inspiring fictional stories, and now he gets to have a new phase of his career telling this really inspiring true life story.
John said you can retire in space.
Like Horizons.
Perfect. I wonder who will be the next celebrity Imagineer. Because this kind of, him moving on is like the end of an era.
Yeah, you know, they a lot of the big names have moved on over, you know, the last decade or so. And it's interesting whether there's going to be a new crop. You know, there's a few people that they promote in the in online videos. I think Kim Irvine is probably the most notable who's still around, because she's kind of a legacy connection. But yeah, it's interesting whether they're going to start promoting more younger Imagineers, or if Imagineering in Disney is going to be more of a brand that they're going to de-emphasize the individual artists.
We'll have to wait and see. This is interesting. This, of course, was shared by The Hollywood Reporter and has not been officially confirmed by Disney.
I want it so badly to be true.
Your mileage may vary. But according to Hollywood Reporter, Disney is working on a Magic Kingdom universe cinematic experience, kind of like the MCU, for Disney Plus, kicking things off with a show inspired by the Society of Explorers and Adventurers.
You know, Disney, this is kind of in the past been something that's for the hardcore fans. It's sort of most notably in Tokyo Disneyland, but it's sort of woven through Adventureland and other areas and parks around the world. And it's sort of always been kind of an Easter egg and an inside joke. so for them to take that idea and make it into a big budget, you know, very visible Disney Plus series, it's kind of a bold move. You know, they've had comic books and stuff, but to make it into you know, live action and put that kind of money behind it would be pretty impressive.
Yeah. The premise that the reporter shared kind of makes me wonder if they're just using the name Society of Explorers and Adventurers and changing what it means. Because they
said that would be a way to really really annoy the fans.
Because they say that this show is set in a world where all of the themed lands and characters of the Disney parks and films actually exist. But Society of Explorers and Adventurers is like a group of people. And not like Cinderella and Snow White are real and Buzz Lightyear is real. And I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too deeply into it, but that's what I thought when I saw it.
Yeah, I think that there's not a lot of detail that we have, so we could probably spend hours speculating. There are probably YouTube videos spending hours already speculating based on this tiny little bit of a rumor that we have. I'm not even sure where this would fit in, because I feel like we have Disney Plus series announced and scheduled for at least the next year or so.
Yeah.
So if this is going to happen, it's not going to, I don't think this is going to be for 2021 or even 2022.
No way. The Hollywood Reporter claims that this show is currently in development.
There's a lot in Hollywood in development.
It's like,
doesn't mean a lot.
You know? No.
When we see a trailer or at least some sort of announcement, that's when I'll believe this one. But I want it to be true.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Could you think of the merch that would happen because of this? Like shirts with this crest on it or something? Man, that'd be so cool. Over at Walt Disney World, the face mask rules have gotten a bit of clarification. Now, instead of only keeping your mask on unless you are stationary and eating or drinking, now you have to keep your face mask on unless you are actively eating and drinking. So, for example, if you were seated at a table service restaurant and you take your mask off immediately, can't do that anymore.
Yeah. I think people might be overblowing a little bit how big a change this is. You know, it's a rewording of one sentence. And it doesn't mean that you have to, like, take your mask off, take one bite or one sip, and then immediately put your mask back on and to chew, or else they're going to throw you out.
Yeah.
You know, they're being reasonable about it. The idea is that, you know, you don't just take the mask off as soon as you get in the restaurant or as soon as they seat you. You know, while you're looking at the menu, while you're waiting to order, you leave the mask on. When you're waiting for your food to show up, you leave the mask on. And then you can take it off, you know, as long as you've got food at your table. But then once you're done, I think a lot of this is to prevent people from just, you know, sitting at a table for an hour or so, just lounging around in a, you know, in a restaurant area without their mask on because they still have a tray sitting in front of them. So just, you know, it's just about being respectful and considerate of everyone around you.
It's yeah.
Not a huge difference. Just, you know, once you're finished with your meal, you know, take a minute and then put that mask back on.
And some people already do this. Mm-hmm. So now it's just in writing.
Yeah.
We finally found out what the construction over at City Walk is. One of the not as great kept secrets. you can now see on the updated construction walls at City Walk Orlando that a new studio store is going to take over what used to be Peak or Pick. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Pick, I think, Pick? Is the proper pronunciation.
Oh, popping your peas in the microphone. fresh produce and the back half of Quiet Flight Surf Shop, a.k.a. The Breezeway. Rest in peace.
I miss Fossil.
Yeah. But this store seems like it's going to look really cool.
It looks snazzy. And I first of all, I think it's funny that this is Universal. So when we say official confirmation, we don't mean a press release or an event announcing it. Literally, they just slap some concept art on
the wall. Here you go.
All right, there you go, folks. That's what it is. We don't have a lot of detail. I bet you there's going to be a big Harry Potter area inside. And I also think we're going to see some Nintendo stuff in there.
Please. Please.
Yeah. The real question to me is, what becomes of the old Universal Studios store? Prime location right in the middle of City Walk.
Yeah, that's the great question. I mean, right now they're kind of turning it into like a throwback nostalgia store, at least in its theming.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they would also create merchandise down the line to reflect that, or if it could become something else entirely.
Yeah, I would say that that spot, it's got the karaoke club on the second floor, which does surprisingly well on the weekends, but can be pretty dead on the weekdays. And it's also got the Hot Dog Hall of Fame attached to that building, which means that they've got a full kitchen. So if they wanted to turn that whole thing into a new dining venue, dining seems to have been done seems to be doing really well for City Walk with, you know, things like Big Fire and Cowfish in recent years. So I wouldn't be surprised if something new goes in there, if it's a new restaurant.
Give us a Universal themed restaurant.
Well, that would be awesome. Retro Universal.
Yeah.
It could be Cafe 80s from Back to the Future Part 2.
I think my mom took a trip to New York once when I was really young, and she told me about this bar that she went to called Jekyll and Hyde's or something.
It was flat. Oh, fantastic. Yes,
I imagine something like that.
There were actually rumors of a Jekyll and Hyde come to City Walk 20
what?
Years ago. 20 years ago. Never panned out. but, yeah, something along those lines. Obviously, probably not a third party, probably something made by Universal themselves.
Yeah. That would be so
dream.
Cool.
We can dream.
Universal, if you're listening, take our ideas, please. Mm-hmm. And also, this little ditty popped up if you're watching the live show, but if you're not, let me describe it for you. A beautiful wood and blue sign for the Velocicoaster with a big arrow attached to it.
Yep.
Has popped up.
And it says summer 2021, but if you were to peel back that little summer 2021 sign, you would see a digital wait time underneath. So they are prepared for a standby queue for this at some point.
And to think that the standby queue would have to be in front of this for them to put the wait time on it.
Yeah.
Oof.
yeah, it's sort of like I think there might be a similar setup at Ratatouille when that comes to Epcot, putting a wait time notification significantly far out from the attraction entrance itself so that people don't walk all the way down there. It's going to be kind of a hike because you're going to have to go either across the bridge or around the Discovery Center and down to the front to enter the attraction. And, you know, if there's a 2-hour wait, they want people to know that before they walk all the way down there.
Oh, I can hear them now. Let's see. In some exciting bit of news, I thought this was going to be them saying that they're trying to reopen. Because I believe Six Flags Magic Mountain has already set out an opening date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Six Flags is planning on opening with rides, but Disneyland's doing something a little different.
Yeah, Disneyland is offering a touch of Disney, the aforementioned limited capacity ticketed experience with food and beverages at Disney California Adventure.
I believe that the place that Disney is touching you here is in your wallet. Because this is a $75 hard ticket event, and as far as I can tell, there are no special discounts for former annual pass holders. And that $75 gets you parking at the Mickey and Friends parking garage. It does not get you a tram, so you'll be hiking from that parking garage.
Oh, yeah, because it's Mickey and Friends.
California Adventure. You'll be allowed inside, and how much?
25.
Yes, $25 credit, which I don't think is going to go very far, because in addition to having Carthay Circle and Lamplighter Inn open, there's also going to be food festival-style booths around the park, and I think that $25 will last you about 25 seconds.
So let me think. So parking is $10 still, or did they raise that?
So it depends on what you consider. So normally theme park parking was $28.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's when there's a theme park with actual rides. Normally, if you were just going to downtown Disney, you could do that for, well, since the pandemic, post-pandemic reopening, that was a $10 fee.
Okay.
But keep in mind, let's say you have four people in your party, if you're sharing one car, normally you would only pay parking for one car. Now, you know, if you're going to factor that parking in, each of those people in that are paying that in their ticket, even if you only need it for one vehicle.
Dang, yeah. Yep. So then that $10, the $25 fee, so you're paying like $40 to get into a park with no rides and distanced character encounters.
Distanced character encounters. I assume there's going to be some sort of socially distanced entertainment, and I believe a specially curated playlist of Disney classics. We're going to hear that over the sound speaker system. I think that's one of the things they're advertising.
Yes.
Yep.
I think there was a DJ mentioned as well.
Yeah. It's perhaps. Still, I mean, you know, it isn't like the sampler cards that Knott's Berry Farm is giving out, where you can pretty much get a full meal worth out of what you're paying to get in. You know, but if you're a Southern Californian and you have been desperate for, you know, a touch of Disney all of these months, I don't think they're going to have any problem selling this out.
Oh, no.
Even if we're sitting here and saying that, you know, it seems like a lot of money for what you're getting, they're not going to have any trouble selling this out.
No way. Well, if you are in that area and you're interested, tickets go on sale on March the 4th, and the event will happen on select dates from March 18th through April 5th. And if you miss out on the first wave of tickets, you're in luck because they're releasing them on a rolling basis until the experience dates have passed, which is kind of nice.
Right, because instead of doing something like just letting people sign up to show their interest and be calmly notified when they have a chance to buy a ticket, we should create stress over and over again where each time that they're released, people feel like they have to get up at 6 a.m. and hover over the refresh key until they can hopefully snag a ticket.
I'm having a sense of deja vu here.
I feel like with Disney, we've been through this before, whether it's a merchandise event or a special hard ticket event, where we hear complaints because people all slammed the server at once and someone is always getting disappointed, and someone's always staring at some Millennium Falcon that's spinning in circles while they can't log in.
What a nightmare.
Gotta be a better way. Gotta be a better way.
Yeah, there has to be something. Right. They also said that ticket prices are subject to change, so I suppose if this thing blows up, they reserve the right to raise the prices for you.
I wouldn't expect them to lower it.
No.
Yeah, but if the first batch sells out in 2 seconds, assume the next batch might be more expensive.
Also worth noting, Buena Vista Street has most recently been a part of Downtown Disney, but starting March 15th, my birthday, you won't be able to access that as part of Downtown Disney anymore.
You know, I know there was some online speculation that that meant they would open up Disneyland's Main Street so that people could go there. No announcement at all about that happening yet. So,
I mean, I would love to see Disneyland open again, but
I'm not sure if they could handle the influx of people, because, you know, just the last few nights, there's been like an hour wait to get into the Esplanade. And that's just for the stuff that is open in Downtown Disney. If they have Downtown Disney, Buena Vista Street, and Disneyland's Main Street all operating, I don't know if they can handle that with the temperature checks and everything right now.
Yeah, it seems like a recipe for overwhelm.
Yeah.
For sure. But we'll keep an eye on this. And once the event starts, maybe we can get someone to go and tell us how it is.
Yeah.
And we have come to the point in the show where we discuss WandaVision. So if you have not watched episode 8, titled Previously On of WandaVision, please fast forward like 15 minutes. So, and then go watch it, please, because it was a really good episode. Are they gone? I think they're all gone. All right. WandaVision, episode 8. We got to relive all of Wanda Maximoff's many traumas in her life, as led by her scary godmother, Catherine Hahn, who just ate it up. She's relishing
chewing
this
scenery
role,
and spitting it out.
Yep. She's brilliant. I love her so much. The episode starts off where we kind of get her origin story, where she is being burned at the stake by her fellow witches for delving too deeply into the dark arts and the dark side of magic. Her own mother being one of them. And then Agatha kills them all, including her mother, and then takes the brooch off of her mother's corpse that she is seen wearing throughout the series.
It really makes Christmas time with the family kind of awkward.
Yeah. I gotta say, the effect that they used where, like, their skin kind of sallowed away and then they dropped to the ground and it was, like, all teeth and, like, wrinkly, sucked-in skin, it was really gross.
It's kind of Evil Dead. I kind of liked it, yeah.
Which,
The effects throughout this whole episode, this episode looked like it could have been a Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. Not a TV show. They really went all out with the budget for this one.
Yeah. Well, now you've got me thinking. You said Evil Dead. Well, Sam Raimi is doing Doctor Strange 2. It makes sense. And then back in present day, Agatha is interrogating Wanda, demanding to know how she was able to create Westview and control all of these people, as she said, magic on autopilot. And Wanda's like, I don't know. So they travel back through Wanda's life, starting at childhood with the bomb that kills her parents.
And it's basically like A Christmas Carol meets Wanda, This Is Your Life.
Yeah, and it's rough. We see what everyone has been theorizing the whole time, which is her and her parents and Pietro watching American sitcoms together over dinner. And they're watching the Dick Van Dyke Show. I believe it's the Walnut episode is what it's called. And it's her favorite. And as they're watching it, you see the bomb enter their home and their bodies fly forward. It made me jump.
I was watching it with my wife and she screamed on the couch when it happened. Yeah.
Please don't let us show the parent. Please don't show the parents. Please don't show the parents. But we see that Wanda's memory of this experience is a bit distorted. She said that in Age of Ultron, they waited for 3 days for Tony Stark to kill us with his bomb. But she was able to turn it off with her magic.
So is that a retcon or is that just lazy writing?
I would say it's a retcon. But you could also chalk it up to Wanda not being reliable as like a sort, like a narrator of sorts, I guess. So I don't know. I mean, I think I like that more, that she had to confront that action herself that she did. And maybe she was just so traumatized, she blocked it off. Agatha calls what she did a probability hex, which is a call back to all you comic book fans, because that was part of her magic in the comics. And in her next memory, Wanda sees herself being experimented on by Hydra. She walks into a room where the Tesseract transforms into the Mind Stone. And as she touches it, she sees an apparition of the Scarlet Witch in the Mind Stone. And it looks awesome. And then she passes out. But on the monitor where the Hydra team is watching all of this happen, she edits out where she touches the Mind Stone, similarly to how she edits out all the unsavory parts of WandaVision. So perhaps she's always had this ability to kind of rewrite time as a Nexus being?
Yes, apparently her superhero power is avid editor.
Someone's got to do it. And then we also see her first memory with the Vision, where he just walks through a wall into her room and tries to comfort her. And we got one of the most beautiful lines I've ever heard in a Marvel movie. But what is grief if not love persevering? And everyone's dogging it on Twitter simultaneously while praising it, like, oh, it's a Marvel movie, it's stupid, but it's really good writing.
It's beautiful. First, ironic that consistently throughout the series, even though Vision is a non-human character, he's a robot, he has some of the most human lines of dialogue and the most emotional lines, very much like Data in Star Trek Next Generation, that, you know, the robotic character is the one that shows us the most about what it's like to be human. But yeah, that line and that whole exchange between the two of them is just devastating. Great writing, great acting.
So good. And then, as if we couldn't get any sadder, Wanda goes to S.W.O.R.D. to try and recover Vision's body. And we've seen this, air quotes, before, where she storms in, she takes a body, and she dips. Turns out that that wasn't what really happened. She showed up just wanting to bury him and honoring his living will by not bringing him back to life. And director Tyler Hayward is basically like, look, we tore him to pieces. And she loses her temper, breaks into the lab, but places her hand where the Soul Stone used to be, says, I can't feel you, it's very emotional, and then she just leaves. She leaves Vision's body there and leaves.
And takes a trip to New Jersey.
Yep. Where she finds a dilapidated housing lot that Vision apparently purchased for her so that for them to grow old in, and she just breaks down. And I was really sad. God, as if they couldn't just make it hurt anymore.
Yeah, but it finally makes clear that, you know, the creation of Westview, the creation of the Hex bubble is, you know, it was not Agatha all along, because she didn't force her to do that, and she didn't do it consciously either. It's just an expression of overwhelming grief. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I think I mentioned before, it's kind of like the big bad in season 6 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's like, it's not a demon, it's not an, you know, a Thanos, it's grief, it's sadness, it's the pain of living life is the big bad. And that's a lot harder to defeat.
Yeah, and then we see her kind of create the new Vision, which I have questions.
I have many questions, because we had been assuming all along that this was the corpse of Vision that she had reanimated. But it turns out that it's just an expression of the Soul Stone. It almost looked like part of the Soul Stone was coming out of her and reforming into Vision from thin air, which is totally different from what I thought was happening all along.
Same. Yeah, I thought she was basically subconsciously puppeteering him.
Mm-hmm.
Saying all the things, making him say all these things that she thought he would say. When he's skeptical of her, it's because she knows internally that he would be skeptical of her doing these things. But now I don't know if he's just imaginary or if he's real. Like Billy and Tommy, I think in the comics, they only appear when Wanda's thinking about them or addressing them directly. And then when she's not, they disappear and cease to exist.
They're pretty much just a mental projection.
Yeah. But Agatha says spontaneous creation,
mm-hmm.
which makes me wonder if Marvel is actually retconning that information for the MCU and making them real people. I don't know.
I hope not, because I find the kids kind of annoying and I don't want them sticking around. They're fine as a plot device, but I don't want them staying around long term.
And then after figuring it out and coming out of her sitcom trance, Wanda runs outside to be confronted by Catherine Hahn as Agatha in her fabulous costume, holding Billy and Tommy captive. And Agatha says, "You have chaos magic, and this makes you..."
Dum bum bum.
"The Scarlet Witch." And then it ends. They finally said it.
Yes. And all the Marvel boys and fan girls go, "Yay, they finally used..." After how many movies and episodes, we finally get her character name.
Mm-hmm. And then...
And all the people who don't watch the read the comics are just like, "So? What?"
Huh? Whatever. What? Like, we also didn't get a "Please Stand By" at the end of this episode.
Very, very subtle little change. And we did get a mid-credit sequence, though, which I hope you stuck around for.
I did, and I was surprised that they did this, and now I'm scared. So mid-credit scene, we go back to S.W.O.R.D., and Hayward is like, whatever, we got what we wanted. His project, Cataract, is taking the original Vision, putting him back together, and using chaos magic energy from one of the drones that they previously used to get into Westview. I believe it was in the 80s episode that Wanda pushed out of the Hex, using that magic to bring a white Vision to life. Colorless, probably emotionless, like in the comics. So they are either setting up their divorce, which is going to suck, or they're going to change everything completely and we'll get real Vision again. But this is a lot of effort to just get rid of Paul Bettany in the MCU, if you ask me.
Well, I don't think there's anyone out there who wants to get rid of him. He's definitely an asset. I'll be honest, I don't know where this is going.
Yeah, me neither.
I guess we've got John in the chat telling us that White Vision is a reference to the West Coast Avengers, which, you know, I prefer East Coast rap myself.
So. Yeah, I thought for the longest time that with Billy and Tommy, they were trying to set up Young Avengers, because Ms. Marvel coming up, Ironheart down the line. But now I don't know. I really, Wanda's been through a lot. I just want her to be okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, she's been through this big emotional journey, and now that she's finally confronted her trauma,
mm-hmm.
if I'm afraid what kind of message it sends if she isn't able to, like, somehow heal and adapt and have some sort of happy ending. If she just, you know, if we end this with her in just as bad emotional state as when she started, I'm not sure what kind of message that's sending about, you know, a powerful female superhero.
Or turning her into the next big bad of the MCU, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I want her to process and heal and get her together.
Yeah. So. We love Wanda.
And let the poor New Jersey... It's bad enough these people have to live in New Jersey. You know, quit torturing them. They've been tortured enough already.
But we will have to see. I think next week's episode is supposed to be pushing like 50 minutes. So it's basically a TV movie. I'm nervous.
Of course, 42 of those minutes are probably credits.
Yeah. I'm very scared. Kevin Feige is he hasn't said as much, but he basically has implied that this is it for WandaVision. They don't have any plans for a second season. Not that you would need one, but I'm kind of sad. This has been so refreshing for the MCU, so fun mm-hmm. to watch and try to dissect week after week. Whereas if it had been released all at once, like on Netflix or something, I would have binged it the first weekend and then stopped talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still not a fan of them releasing it at god awful early in the morning on Fridays.
Right.
If it could just come out at like 8 o'clock, like a normal TV show, we would all have much better sleep and wouldn't have to worry about avoiding spoilers on social media. Having something that we can talk about every week as opposed to just burning through it all at once has been really great.
Mm-hmm. Remember when Game of Thrones did that? It would come on at 8 on Sundays. And it was like a whole thing.
There was a time where we all used to gather around the television. We had 3 channels. I remember before there was even Fox. All right. You kids, get off my lawn.
And for our main attraction this week, some very exciting news for Legoland Florida Resort. They are adding to their gates with a Peppa Pig theme park. The world's first, if you do not think that the one in the UK is a full park. That seems to be a point of contention on the internet as of late.
I will say it appears to be a point of contention among one person in particular who I have seen post on every single article and every social media thread referencing, telling people, no, in the UK there is a land, but mm-hmm. this is the first standalone, well, I guess it's not standing alone, it's standing next to Legoland. It is going to use the parking infrastructure from Legoland. It's basically in the Legoland parking lot, but it's going to be a separate admission. There will probably be a combination ticket available.
Yes.
But I got to say, this took me totally by surprise. We knew that there was going to be a big expansion coming to Legoland. I did not expect it to be a separate brand in a separate park. I thought it would just be more Legoland. I am obviously not the target demographic for Peppa Pig.
Me neither.
But it is huge. It's big in Europe, and it's also big over here kids. It's on definitely targeting kids on the lower end of the Legoland age range. I think Legoland kind of targets kids up to the early tweens, and this is more like preschool age, like kids up to like 5 or 6, I think, are the Peppa Pig target audience.
Mm-hmm. This park is set to open in 2022. It will be separately ticketed from the rest of Legoland Florida Resort, but you can get an annual pass that includes it, or a standalone pass to that park. And it also operates year-round. So it's the real deal. It's the full thing.
Well, I got to tell you, I was at Legoland not long ago for the Pirates Weekend to see the premiere of the new water sports stunt show. And as you drive in, you kind of circle around the section of the parking lot where this is going in. I don't know what they really consider a full theme park. I don't, in terms of, you know, we don't have details on exactly how many rides or attractions this is going to be. I think that in terms of physical space, it's probably going to be closer in size to the land at a normal theme park than what we think of as a whole theme park. But since this is designed for small kids, maybe it's appropriate to have a small theme park. Definitely, it's not going to be Magic Kingdom sized, though.
No way.
This is definitely, this is a mini park.
At least in the concept art, we can see kind of a carousel hot air balloon type ride similar to the Inside Out attraction at DCA. Mm-hmm. We have a mini drop tower here. It looks like some Midway games in the back. I see a muddy puddle, which I know is a big Peppa Pig thing only from Cardi B's TikToks about her daughter. I hope she gets invited to the opening.
Everything I know about Peppa Pig, I learned from TikTok.
Yep. But very excited for this. Maybe we'll have to get old Banks Lee on. Once.
Yes, I would love to, and he can. Yeah. I'm curious if it's going to have the same management team, the same mm-hmm. PR team as Legoland. I assume so.
Yeah.
But you know, I certainly, especially after Epic Universe was pushed back, I did not expect a new theme park to open in Florida in 2022. So great to see the industry moving forward.
Yeah, now let's get Epic Universe back online.
Amen.
Please. And before we go, I have quite a few listener thank yous to share. In case you didn't know, Attractions Magazine has a 4-tier subscription service. And if you choose Club or VIP to sign up for the week after you join, you get a shout out here on the Attractions Podcast. So big thank yous this week to Monica Compton, Denise Welch, Nicholas Meyer, and Douglas Temple. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Yay. And if you are interested, you can pick up a subscription to our print magazine, get 4 issues every year. They're very nice and full of nice exclusive goodies and stories that you can't get on the website. And
I hear you've got some contributions in the spring issue.
I do. I have 2 columns, and I just submitted my last one today. So keep an eye out. We should have a release date for that one soon. But if you are not a physical media kind of person, we have a new digital subscription option where you can get digital downloads of each issue to look at on your phone or iPad or whatever you like. Your toaster, if it can do that. And if you are so inclined, we would really appreciate it if you go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. Say something nice.
Please, because that helps us get out to more people. It helps the algorithms share our with more people, spread the word about Attractions Podcast.
Come on, help us out. I said last week I would fix my broken pipes, and guess what? My broken pipes got fixed.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. Seth, if you would, tell the folks at home where they can find you on the interwebs.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @skubersky or at @theugseries, and you can pick up a copy of my new book, The Unofficial Guide to Universal Orlando 2021 at theunofficialguides.com.
Do it. Do it. And you can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's spelled funny on Twitter and Instagram. And every day at attractionsmagazine.com, at attractions on Twitter, at attractionsmagazine on Instagram, and youtube.com/attractionsmagazine. And I apologize in advance for any WandaVision tweets that happen on Friday. I'm probably going to be inconsolable. So be prepared for that. And until next week, I hope you guys stay safe, wear your mask, wash your hands, but have fun, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.